and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
How about that?
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
Let's get him. Let's get him hard.
Pedro Fernandez.
Better grab me quick before my knees give way.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, coming at you from the multi-million-dollar sports byline facilities in the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, make that 36 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. For the next hour, I'm knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Straight up, I'm an award-winning writer, former four-time Golden Glove champion. And for the next hour, we're going to talk combat sports, both boxing and mixed martial arts, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and like a thousand other internet platforms, including SB Nation Sports. So straight up, we have open phone lines all around the planet. That's right, we don't discriminate. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or get this, the guilt-free, no-commitment text line, a little more popular than calling in live. If you want to shoot me a text, you can. Here's the text line, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. So boxing is back. That's right, boxing's back. The UFC's back. Bottom line is combat sports is rocking and rolling, but it's a studio sport now. It's no longer a, how can I put this, spectator sport. And people say to me, you know, that really takes away from it. No, it doesn't. You've got two guys in a ring. It isn't too hard to figure things out. This is not a professional wrestling match where you've got, like, people rooting for the bad guy, rooting for the good guy in order to keep things going, okay? This is a boxing match or a combat sports encounter, okay? No bad guy, no good guy. Winner and a loser. Straight up, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Once again, open phone lines around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the World Boxing Organization. Check them out online, the WBO at WBOboxing.com. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. But baby, you knew that.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Just what do you think of him as a fighter, huh?
Well, his footwork's lousy. He can't counter punch. His timing stinks. And he doesn't breathe properly.
But you like him as a person.
Well, he has a nice smile.
Welcome back to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Of course, this is the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, Saturday edition, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, live on Sports Byline. Straight up, time to go back in time. You know, when I was growing up, I had a lot of aspirations. Maybe it had something to do with me being left-handed, but believe it or not, radio and boxing had nothing to do with it. No. First thing I wanted to do is I wanted to get in the Cub Scouts. I wanted to become a Cub Scout, and, you know, really badly. So I got in the Cub Scouts. I was in Denwood in the Cub Scouts, and that was sort of cool until we realized that, you know, the guy that was running the pack, I'm talking about the pack leader, he was a Boy Scout leader as well, his name was William Bardoli, he was in one way or another molesting us all, okay? So that was the way that went down. So what can I tell you is that you sort of, your picture that you had of the Boy Scouts, you know, as you grow up, you realize, you know, there was something bad. There was something a little shady there. And now, of course, there's class action lawsuits regarding child molestation and closing down the Boy Scouts of America. But, you know, I put the blame on the Boy Scouts of America and the San Francisco Unified School District because they both knew at that one point in time. My mother went to school and said, you know what? Something's going on here. The kid's telling me something's going on here. And they're going, oh, he's got a vivid imagination. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yeah. No vivid imagination. I knew what time it was, okay? But the bottom line is they denied it. So it was the worst kept secret in the world outside of that and the Catholic Church and little boys, okay? So how can I put this? I never became den leader. I got out of the Cub Scouts, never went into the Boy Scouts because of obvious reasons, but my number one aspiration in life was to become a San Francisco policeman. was something I attained and spent 8 years working with the city. I never really did see any real police brutality per se because people knew that they couldn't pull that spit. When I say spit, I mean spit with an H around me. They just knew it, okay? They just couldn't do it. And on time, there were occasions when we would pull up on something and something was getting a little heavy, and I would tell guys, hey, you know, just like that. That would put them in check. Guys would realize, you know, maybe they were starting to go overboard and things like that. So that was stopped. So, you know, bad cops, good cops, for the most part, I had nothing but great, great cops. And the cops that I worked with, they were good cops, okay? But there were some bad cops along the line, and we knew that. But I didn't see it when I was a cop. I didn't. So then I got out of the police department, and time after time, if I came in contact with a police officer, if I didn't tell them I was a former police officer, or if they didn't run my driver's license and find out I was a former police officer, because my driver's license goes back to the San Francisco Police Department, doesn't come back to me, okay? And that's the way it was back in the days. Anyway, but when they run that, then it's a whole different world. I mean, I'm being treated totally differently. I'm serious. So in other words, I remember one time, in South San Francisco, I got roughed up one time by the police for not wearing a seatbelt. He put a gun on my ear and put a mark on the side of my face. I kid you not, because I didn't have a seatbelt on in a residential area. This is the honest to God truth. So while I knew that, you know, that there are bad cops, I didn't think that bad cops were, an entire department, because of the fact that because my department and my chiefs didn't allow that kind of crap to go on, okay? But when you look at the videos nowadays of cops on TV, it's not looking very good. It's not a good portrayal of the police department at all. Police departments across the country. And you know what? It isn't just one police department. It's police department after police department after police department. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, the time has come for this country to change as far as the policing system is concerned. Something's wrong. Something's rotten in Denmark. I kid you not. And I've always said this, that, you know, listen, how can I put this? It boils down to money. And if people don't have any money, they can't get by. I mean, we got a $1,200 check from the government a couple of weeks ago. Oh, boy. Corporate America, which doesn't pay tax, got $500 billion. So where was the looting there? In the streets of San Francisco or on Wall Street? You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. We take it to the Bronx and bring in, of course, are you here yet? Yeah, we'll hold on a little bit on that one. Bottom line is, boxing's coming back, of course, Tuesday, June 9th, WBO featherweight champion. I'm talking about Shakur Stevenson, the undefeated lad. Man, he can rock, no doubt about that. I call him Double S. If he stays out of trouble on the streets, he's going to be a good fighter and probably a decent human being as well. But he's undefeated now, the WBO 126-pound champion, taking on Puerto Rican contender Felix La Sombra Carabillo in a 10-round super featherweight bout. I guess they're going to put him in an overweight match, and, of course, this will mean the guy probably doesn't have that good of a record. Bottom line is, you know, boxing now, if it's back, we've got to see good boxing. In other words, Shakur Stevenson against Pedro Fernandez or Scott Cuddy or maybe he steps up and fights Socrates Palmer. That's not what we want to see. We want to see, you know, we don't want to see practice fights. There's no time for practice fights in the era of the coronavirus. We need straight up real fights. Speaking of real fights, let's take it to the Bronx once again and bring in the Bronx Bomber. I'm talking about the one, the only PhD of boxing, Mr. Socrates Palmer. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Pedro. The summer is here, and the streets are hotter in more ways than one.
That's a hell of a way to put it. You know, I'm looking at the boxing schedule, and while boxing's coming back, they're putting on a lot of Valenzuela. He's gonna defend it. No, he's not gonna defend the WBO 122-pound title. He's gonna step up and weight to 126 and 130, and he's fighting a guy that's 13-11. I mean, you know, when there's no boxing on TV, and then Bob Arum comes back and puts his top guy and the number one guy in Mexico in with a guy that's 13-11. That's not good marketing in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of fighters have said that they don't want to fight in front of empty crowds. I get that, but
I don't.
In reality, more people watch the fight on TV than in person. So, I mean, with this drought without not just boxing, but real sports, you know, for it seems forever, but it's only been in reality about 3 months. Yeah. We don't want to see tune-ups. We don't want to see, kind of like back in the day, in wrestling, those enhancement matches. We don't want to see
squash matches.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to see Barry Horowitz against Greg the Hammer Valentine. You know, we want to see real fights. We want to see. I mean, I understand guys haven't fought. They haven't maybe been able to train properly.
Doesn't matter. It's time to go with the times. I mean, everything that was normal before is not normal now. So, in other words, Teofimo Lopez, he's been training his butt off. More power to him. He's been training his butt off. He knows he's got to stay focused. Of course, the fight with Lomachenko originally scheduled for May, and we don't know when that's going to happen. But that's really, you know what? Of all the fights on the schedule, how come that's the only one I'm licking my chops about?
Because it's probably the best fight in boxing. You know, that could be made because you have two guys that are in their prime. They win in spectacular fashion. Lomachenko is probably the best technical fighter in the sport and probably the best that we've had in quite some time. But he's not a safety first guy. You know, he's a guy that breaks you down mentally and then he takes you out. You know, he fights in an entertaining fashion. Unlike some of the other guys that have held the pound for pound title before, that they're probably not must watch excitement. Guys like Mayweather, or even the late great Pernell Whitaker, great in their style, but not the most TV friendly. And Teofimo Lopez can take you out with one shot. So, and also the animosity and the bad blood that has been boiling for about a year. Lopez has been calling him out.
Yeah. Is this the Leonard Duran of 2020, the Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, the first fight? I mean, because you want to talk about animosity. Good Lord, man. Roberto Duran was walking like 3 or 4 inches off the ground before that fight.
It's a fair comparison in terms of just the blatant disrespect that Lopez has shown for Lomachenko, just like the way Duran did against Leonard. You know, It's a great fight. It's not the only great fight that could be made, but it seems the one that's the easiest to make. They're both under the same promotional banner. Some people may think that Lopez may be a little too green, but I respect the fact that he's got the guts to call out the best. And he's a real champion. He won his title in the ring, and he's looking for even greater a greater accomplishment.
Oh, wait. He's a real time. I caught that jab there. He's a real champion. He won his title in the ring. What are you implying, Mr. PhD?
That he's the real deal.
No.
He's not the internet champ.
Who is the internet champ?
According to Teofimo, Devin Haney holds that distinction. He is the cyber champion. Yes. Undisputed.
And how's Mr. Haney, being a native of San Francisco, now living in Las Vegas in rehab right now, how's he responding to that? Because I know they're going back and forth here on the internet.
I haven't seen his rebuttal, but I will say this about Haney. He has been training also, and he's been working with Floyd Mayweather, the guy who he models his game after, the one he idolizes. So I guess he's going to let his talking happen in the ring if they ever meet. But that's the fight that's probably the hardest to make. Because, you know, they're two different promotions, and I think we don't know about the Zone now, but the Zone probably has him in mind as part of the face of their network. So I don't know if they're going to risk having him fight Teofimo Lopez this stage in the career.
You brought up the Zone. What's up with my refund money? Do I get refunded for these months where there's no boxing on? Or what's going on with that, man? You're the PhD. Let me know.
I'll be honest with you. I haven't had an issue. You know, they actually haven't billed me. I also have seen people requesting refunds. A good friend of mine, Kurt Emhoff, one of the best boxing lawyers in the business, he put on Twitter screenshots of 3 times that he's requested to get his money back.
Cheap
and
Kurt!
And he never responded.
We're going to have to nickname him Cheap Kurt.
Cheap
I know him, so I can say that.
Okay.
Yeah. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide as we have a little fun here. You are tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live World. When we come back, more Socrates Palmer is boxing's only PhD here live on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
The thing is that I'm still in his brain. I'm still in his mind. I'm the guy that he wants to get rid of.
made this possible this evening. All of the effort that you made and all of the people whose names I haven't mentioned, but who did all of the work at the precinct level, who got out the vote, who did all of the effort, brought forth all of the effort that's required. I was a campaign manager 8 years ago. I know what a difference that kind of an effort and that kind of commitment makes. So I thank all of you. Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. So, my thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
52 years gone, baby. That was the dream. Bobby Kennedy. His last public address, June 6, 1968, the Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles, California. I would see him probably 2 or 3 days prior at the campaign headquarters located in an old auto dealership on 11th and Market Street in San Francisco. I mean, there was Bobby Kennedy in the flesh. I kid you not. 3 days later, of course, he passed away. Now, I'll never forget that night. We watched him winning in that speech, and my late grandmother turned off the television, said, "You got to go to bed now." So when it came time to wake up in the morning, they were huddled in the kitchen. I couldn't figure out why they were all huddled in the kitchen, because they didn't want to tell me. They didn't want to, because, you know, I was traumatized by the first Kennedy assassination, and we had passed out bumper stickers, and, you know, I had seen this guy, I mean, in the flesh. I mean, he was like 45-50 feet away. So they were worried about this traumatizing my mother and my grandmother and my uncle. So they were huddled in the kitchen, and I said, "What's going on here?" So I walked in, they go, "Kennedy's dead." And I said, "Okay, I can register with that. John Kennedy's been dead for, like, you know, almost 5 years, you know, November 22nd, 1963. No. Bobby Kennedy was dead. And I didn't register that. I couldn't figure out. I had no idea what they were talking about. It just didn't register at all. I mean, come on. I just watched him on television. He said, "Let's go off to Chicago and we'll win there." And that was that. And they turned off the TV. And the next morning, you tell me as soon as I open up my eyes that he's dead. Well, he's been shot in the head. They don't expect him to live. You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Anyway, that was June 6, 1968, 52 years ago today. If I get emotional about Bobby Kennedy, I think that he was the end of the dream. I think that when they whacked out Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. when they whacked out Martin Luther King, and of course John Kennedy first, but when they took out Martin Luther King and then took out Bobby Kennedy 2 months later, that was writing on the wall. If you didn't realize what time it was then, I think you do now in 2020. All you got to do is turn on the television. You are tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Let's take it back to the Bronx. My man, Socrates Palmer, boxing's true PhD. So tell me, what's on your mind besides Buffalo cops roughing up some old? What were they roughing that old dude up for in his ear? Did you see that? Where
that was terrible, man.
His ear was bleeding?
Yeah, and I heard one of the police officers said that he tripped.
That was the official report. See, when cops were around me, they knew they couldn't get away with any test lying or any of that kind of crap, because I wasn't going to go up there and go on the stand and confirm a lie. You hear what I'm saying? So they knew that. So cops knew that. So we went together, and I never lost a case on a police report because I was always straight and honest. You don't have, listen, to be a good policeman, you don't have to create crime. Crime's there.
Yes, that is true, P. That is true. Just, who's my man from Dragnet? Just the facts, right?
Just the facts. So tell me, what's on your mind, sir?
Well, around this time, in New York, in Canastota, would be the Boxing Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the class, got Shane Mosley going in, Bernard Hopkins, and Juan Manuel Marquez. As far as the fighters go, Christy Martin, I see he's on this list. Mm-hmm. But the names of, Marquez and Shane Mosley stood out for me, because my question to you, Pedro, should they have gone in so fast with the speculation of PED use? And are we, as fans and media persons, are we not hard on fighters using PEDs, like as they are in Major League Baseball?
No, you know, Oscar was my best friend. I mean, me and Oscar go back to like 1989 before he won the the gold medal in 92. I was his publicist when he was with Don May Boxing. So me and Oscar were tight. And then I was blowing those stories. I'm the one that broke the stories about Mel De La Hoya using Mosley using performance enhancing drugs. And I came up with the actual testimony where he had to testify, and we had to put up on YouTube through Victor Conti and that kind of good stuff. So we blew him out of the water on that as far as his denying using performance enhancing drugs. And Oscar was with me on this, man. He just was. I mean, when I visited him, he said, yeah, what's the latest? What's the latest? And then he turned into a promoter and he signed Mosley to a contract, and me and Oscar haven't talked since.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and I like Shane Mosley. I've met him. He's a nice guy, but you know, in boxing, there's not that same accountability. Like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are not getting to the Hall of Fame anytime soon, or Mark McGwire. And those are three of the all-time biggest stars in the history of that sport. But in boxing, not that guys aren't entitled to make mistakes, but it seems like there's no repercussion.
Boxing has no shame, bro. That's just, there is no shame in boxing, much like the GOP.
Much like the GOP. Yeah. That stood out, because I believe that they're gonna get their day, next year because of the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Christy Martin, Lou DiBella, who is, in my opinion, the guy that brought back boxing in New York, in terms of the house shows, and he had the Broadway boxing. Lou is never one to hold his tongue, especially when it comes to boxing and politics.
No. Okay, I've known Mr. DiBella for a couple of decades or more, and the Mr. DiBella nowadays is much more reserved than the Mr. DiBella that worked for HBO. Believe me.
Yeah.
Believe me. Okay. Hey. And back then. Nobody was better, I think, for boxing when he was at HBO than Lou DiBella. He created the Boxing After Dark series, was probably the greatest boxing series, period. Okay. Just hunger against hunger. So he was a smart dude in that way. But when they screwed him out of the CEO job and they gave it to the other guy instead, they told him, listen, you'll never be CEO because Seth Abraham is going to be CEO forever. So he says, well, what do you want to do? What do you mean? I can't move up. I can't move up anymore. He goes, no, but if you want to become a promoter, we'll give you some dates. So they decided to do that. And then once he decided he was going to turn in his papers and become a promoter, they decided they were going to move with some other guy to be CEO. Okay, so it was a really ugly scene there at HBO. It just wasn't. DiBella got the short end of it when he probably should have got the elevator. He got the shaft instead. But I think that him, personally at HBO Sports, boxing would still be there.
Wow, that's, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, wow, that's, I mean, you don't think that he would have been in bed with Heyman
I think that Lou DiBella was, when he was, he was a bad dude. He had power. Don't you understand? He wielded power, and he wielded it in a democratic way. And it wasn't like, mm-hmm, I'm going to piss on this guy or spit on that guy, right, with an H. No, DiBella did boxing. I watched him, man. I was like right behind him. I thought he was a wonderful man, worker for HBO. He just was. He was the best for boxing. People he ran into, he was the most benevolent. He's probably still a benevolent guy, but he was the most benevolent guy you could imagine everywhere he went. I mean, he was a wonderful man. And then he became a boxing promoter. And then things change.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I can only speak on my personal interactions with him, and Lou has always been good with me. I've seen Lou get in the middle of scraps, man, like at a brawl, mm-hmm, in one of his house shows. I mean, he's nuts. You know, I have no problem saying that. He's not playing with a full deck, you know, but he was great for boxing. He really pumped life back into the New York scene, in terms of, promoting guys like Paulie Malignaggi and, Curtis Stevens. I mean, not guys that didn't make it all the way, but you know what? It was something to go and cover once a month, and it was good stuff.
You know,
Dan Goosen.
Yeah, you know what really impressed Lou, though?
Amen.
California weed. I got to run.
Okay. On that note, yes.
Much love.
All right, champ.
The best. The great Socrates Palmer, folks, will be on next week, of course, every week here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The true PhD of boxing, Mr. Socrates Palmer Jr., of course, of the Bronx. He blesses us with his presence. So every Saturday, live on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. And don't forget, you can always catch the podcast with Socrates Palmer at anchor.com. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
How kind of love to walk down that golden street, hand in hand with you, the lovers meet. Whoa, I love to go to loveland with you. Pretty baby, cause my love is true. I swear I do.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Who's done it? We have a new heavyweight champion in the world.
Let's talk about some significant days in history. Of course, today is D-Day. Talking to Normandy landings, of course, of 1944, June 6, 1944. A lot of people died there, tens of thousands. I don't even want to go into how many people actually passed, but we do have to recognize that. And, of course, in the world of boxing history, June 6, 1988, I'm at the Las Vegas Hilton in, obviously, Las Vegas. So I'm kicking it. It's one of my first early cards as a boxing promoter, a boxing reporter. And I'm working for Flash Magazine, I think the San Francisco Progress newspaper, and Boxing Update. So anyway, I'm doing some radio as well. So I'm there, and Tommy Hearns is fighting Iran Barkley. So Tommy's like a 4 or 5 to 1 favorite. Tommy, of course, had moved up from 147 pounds to 154 pounds, and now he's at 160 pounds, and he's middleweight, and he's fighting Iran the Blade Barkley. That's Iran, I kid you not, guy from a rough part of town. The Blade was just one rough dude. He just was, okay? So Iran's getting lit up in like the third round. He's taking these body shots and he's like, oh, I mean, you can hear him just, I'm a kidding you. You hear him screaming. I'm in like the fourth row. I'm like freaking out. I never heard a fighter scream from body shots before in my life. I mean, ever. So he's, oh, and he closes his eyes and he throws a punch and he catches Tommy Hearns on the chin and he knocks Tommy out. And it's all over. And Iran, the Blade Barkley, this kid from New York, this kid from the hood, who has no education at all, could barely don't talk all that well. Anyway, bottom line is, guess what? He is a new WBC middleweight champion of the world. So I run into him I wait for him and I want to interview him at the post-fight press conference. So he's sitting there and his eyes all busted up because Tommy had given him a licking. I mean, it looked like Tommy took a baseball bat, hit him all over the head with it and hit him in the ribs. I mean, Tommy was brutalizing him. Listen, rarely have fights ever been turned around like that fight's been turned around. I think maybe John David Jackson and that crazy guy down there in South America. I can't think. But outside of that, no, not too many fights have got turned around this quickly with one punch. But Tommy Hearns was toast. He was just toast. So I run into Iran at the post-fight press conference, and I walk up to him. I said, Mr. Barkley, my name is Pedro Fernandez. I'm with Flash Magazine. He goes, my name is Iran. And although my name is Iran, I never did. And I said, I had to think about that for a second. Wait, although my name is Iran, I never did. And he didn't. I mean, he stood right there with Tommy Hearns and just took it and gave it and all that. They went back and forth. At the end of the day, I had to respect the guile and the guts and the ability to take those kind of shots because anybody else would have just folded. I mean, they just would have. I mean, the body shots, the head shots, he was taking a beating by Tommy Hearns. But Iran Barkley, and then he would, of course, lose that title to who? Roberto Duran. Roberto Duran gets knocked out in 2 rounds by Tommy Hearns. Of course, that was at 154 pounds. And Tommy, of course, lost at 147 to Ray Leonard in the 14th round when he was stopped, of course, against the ropes there in Caesar's Palace. So, I mean, there's history. There's history there. But Duran ends up being the magic guy on all this. And people laugh when I try to tell you this. I mean, the guy moved up from 122 to 168 pounds, and he competed at all different weight classes. So at the end of the day, I still consider him the best fighter pound for pound in the history of boxing. June 7, 2003. Man, it's hard to believe it's been that long ago. Arturo Gatti decisions Mickey Ward at the Boardwalk Hall. Call it the Atlantic City Convention Center. Call it what you want, but it's on the boardwalk in New Jersey. Of course, there was no title at stake, but, man, they both weighed 142 pounds, and that was a pretty ugly fight as far as the residual effects are concerned. Of course, the three fights they had together were like, you know, like what can I say? Just like give one guy a bat and the other guy a bat, and they just take turns hitting each other. I never got off on those fights. In fact, I probably didn't watch them. Didn't watch them live. I don't remember watching them live. And, you know, I'm not one of those fans that wants to sit there and watch two guys club each other back and forth and figure who's going to last the longest. I mean, that's not my idea of boxing. My idea of boxing is to stick and move and, or to go out there and impose my will and get things over with. One or the other. You got to do one or the other. Either you go out there and you decide to say, you know what, I'm going to stick and move and try to figure out what things going on there, or I'm going to go out there right away and impose my will. Well, 99% of the time, I went out there and tried to impose my will. Of course, it was successful at times, and other times it wasn't. But June 8th, 2002, Lennox Lewis knocks out the comeback kid. I'm talking about Mike Tyson. Of course, Mike Tyson coming back at that point in time. Man, he told me, in 1990, you know, 1991, maybe I don't have it anymore. And he said that was the first time he ever questioned himself. Maybe I don't have it anymore. Of course, in 2004, when he lost to Kevin McBride in Washington, D.C., he admitted, I haven't had it since 1989. Of course, he and I went back and forth on that one. But Mike Tyson defeated June 8th, 2002, of course, by Lennox Lewis. That's when they held the fight in Memphis, Tennessee, because they didn't have any marijuana testing there. Yeah, coincidence? No. Both guys like to smoke weed, but Lewis dominated the bout with a TKO, I believe, in 8 rounds to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. June 9th, 1978. Never understood this. Ken Norton, WBC Heavyweight Champion. He is the only champion in the history of boxing, the heavyweight championship, He's the only boxer in the history of boxing, as far as heavyweight champions are concerned, that never won a heavyweight title bout. He didn't. Of course, Muhammad Ali beat, Leon Spieks beat Muhammad Ali, and, Ken Norton was number one. Of course, Ali wanted a rematch. That was where the money was at, so they went with that for the WBA title. The WBC title was declared vacant. And Larry Holmes and Ken Norton, let's get back, they anointed it Ken Norton champion. That's what happened. They decided we're going to make Ken Norton champion without him even having to fight for the title. So Norton's the champion. He enters his 15-round bout with Larry Holmes at the Caesars Palace, of course, Sports Pavilion. In Las Vegas, of course, that was a great place, no doubt about that. But it was the first defense of a paper title. It just was. It was Ring Magazine's Fight of the Year for 1970, although my historian, talk about Grandmaster Billo, he says the Alfonso Zamora Alberto Sandoval fight was way more exciting. I don't know. Anyway, bottom line is, black and white days, according to our historian, June 10th, Carmen Basilio. Of course, Carmen Basilio, you remember him? He was on this show many times the old dude was on the show, and he was always talking smack, wasn't he? I mean, talking smack about Billy Backus. Billy Backus was like his son-in-law or his nephew or something like that, and Billy Backus won the welterweight title, I think, in the 70s. So what happened? Carmen Basilio, who was the former champion, of course, won the title at 147, and then stepped up to 160, won the middleweight title, beat Sugar Ray Robinson, the greatest fighter of all time in the minds of some. Anyway, he beats him, and Carmen, how can I put this? Carmen, I said to him, you beat the greatest fighter of all time. How can he beat the greatest? This is what Carmen said to me. How can Ray Robinson be the greatest fighter of all time if this onion farmer beat him? How can he? He can't. Okay, I'll go with that. Bottom line is, of course, Larry Holmes wins the WBC title this day, June 9th, 1978. Larry would go on to, of course, record a record number of heavyweight championships defenses. And then, of course, in 1985, his big mouth sort of cost him a little bit when he said that Rocky Marciano couldn't carry his jockstrap. Remember that one? Rock couldn't carry my jockstrap, and he probably couldn't. But, you know, he insulted the boxing establishment. And the boxing establishment, they're white and they're right. So, for the most part, you can't get away with doing that. So, at the end of 15 rounds, Michael Spinks was a split decision winner over Larry Holmes, of course, and grabbed away the heavyweight title. Of course, they would have a rematch. Spinks would win the rematch. People would say that maybe the first fight Larry Holmes got gypped, but I don't know. At the end of the day, it was like a coin toss. It was a close fight. I was there. It could have went either way. I thought Holmes had the edge going into the 15th round. That was on my personal scorecard. I think I had him up by 2 or 3 points. But at the end of the day, I really couldn't argue with Michael Spinks winning. Anyway, that's boxing history for the day, brought to you by our Grandmaster Bill, of course, the house historian. ESPN, of course, coming back, as I said, June 9th, Shakur Stevenson taking on Felix Carabello, was 13-1. Stevenson 13-0, 7 wax. Carabello 13-1-2 at 9. 2 draws and 15 fights, a sort of suspect right there. Maybe he's fighting at home, a little home cooking there. Michaela Meyer going to take on Helen Joseph in a battle of females. That's going to be on June 9th from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Of course, that will not be a live card. And of course, June the 11th, Jesse Magdaleno, 27-1, taking on Yanifil Vicente, 36-4. Adam Lopez on the card, 13-2, taking on Luis Correa, 12-2. The 16th, Joshua Green, 22-1, taking on Mike Plania, 23-1. Antonio DeMarco's on the card, 33-8-1. 33-8-1, taking on Giovanni Santillan, who's undefeated in 25 fights. The 18th, we go Jose Pedraza on top with Gabe Flores in the co-feature. The 20th from Mexico City, of course, still on ESPN. I'm talking about pound for pound, the greatest Mexican fighter right now in existence, Emmanuel Navarrete. 31-1, 27 KOs. Taking on Uriel Lopez. Uriel comes in with his record of 13-13 with one draw and six KOs. See, this is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. I don't care if Uriel's a tough dude. I don't care if he's never been knocked out in his life. I don't care if Uriel, he's 13-13. I mean, give me the impression that you're going to bring in somebody that can fight. Someone that's going to be competitive. I mean, if you buy a program, you're not going to buy a program because there'll be no live gate. Okay? But I don't think they can get away with it. I don't think they could have got away with this in Mexico City. I don't think they could have got away with putting him in there with a guy that's 13-13 if they had a live gate. I think their Mexican fans would have rebelled. They just would have. But, of course, they're going to put this on TV. So if they're watching it on TV, if you've got ESPN Plus or ESPN, of course, ESPN Deportes, all those different channels. Bottom line is boxing is going to be rocking and rolling. Coming back on the 20th, of course, as I said, Uriel Lopez, 13-13 will win draw. I would always be willing to, if things didn't happen, I mean, come on. Whatever you want to bet on Navarrete, bet on him. I mean, come on. There's never, I mean, might as well just say, I don't, shouldn't hold fights like that. You know, 23rd, of course, June 23rd, Andrew Mahoney, 21 and zip, taking on Joshua Franco, of course, 16-1. And that's all going to be coming to you from the MGM Grand with the exception of the Mexico City fight with Navarrete. And Navarrete, 13-13. That kills me, man. That really does. Straight up in the world of the UFC, of course, the UFC is going to rock and roll tonight with UFC 250 on top. Pound for pound, maybe the best fighter in women's MMA. Of course, we'll talk about Amanda Nunes, the 135 and 145-pound champion. She's rocking and rolling. She took out Chris Cyborg Santos. Of course, that was before the UFC conned Chris Cyborg Santos into fighting that one last fight on her contract and then dismissing her because they didn't want to have a rematch. Because if they have a rematch, I think that Cyborg Santos has a real good chance of winning, and they really don't want that. I think right now that Dana White's got a figure in Amanda Nunes that he can control to an extent, and that's what Dana White's all about, control. Because let's be honest, these UFC champions, it's not the champion. It's not the fighter. It's the UFC. I mean, Stipe Miocic's the world UFC heavyweight champion, right? You don't know that for the most part. You just know that UFC's got a heavyweight champion. The UFC takes precedent. The UFC promotes themselves over the fighters. They always have. I told you, the greatest pimps in the history of sports, without a doubt. 8-12% of every dollar. 8-12% of every dollar. I'll say it again. 12 cents of every dollar at the max is going to fighters. In other words, the UFC, this corporation that's running them right now, this bought them for $4.2 billion, is pocketing 88 cents on the dollar. Holy cow. The talent's getting 12%. Something's wrong there. As I said earlier, and I said this previously, you know, pimps couldn't get away with that on the streets of San Francisco. They just couldn't. You're tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. Your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA, of course. The UFC card tonight will be on pay-per-view eventually, but it starts off on ESPN Plus, I believe. So you want to check your TV guys for that. They usually go at 10 p.m. Eastern time for the May card. Of course, that's 7 o'clock out here on the West Coast. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. A little Tower of Power to the break.
Nunes' hands are down, and she's walking Ronda down. She tags her again.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is Mexican. He's proud to be Mexican.
The master himself of Top Rank. I'm talking about Mr. Bob Arum, of course, 86 years young. Give him some props, man. Former U.S. attorney under the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration for a minute. I kid you not. A former U.S. attorney, of course, the president and the CEO of Top Rank Boxing. Give him some props, Mr. Bob Arum. Of course, USC, as I said, rocking and rolling tonight. The main event, Amanda Nunes taking on Felicia Spencer. Spencer's only lost one fight. That was a three-round decision to the aforementioned Chris Cyborg-Santos, so that figures to be a competitive match, at least on paper, and this is at 145 pounds, where I think Nunes is sort of, she should be 135 pounds. That's where she was a champion originally, where she beat up and Ronda Rousey and did all kinds of stuff. I mean, she was a monster at 135. 145, of course, taking out Cyborg-Santos. What can you say? Nothing. Nobody's ever done that. The co-feature, Rafael Asahuna. Going to take on Cody Garbrandt, the former champion at 135. Of course, Garbrandt got knocked out by T.J. Dillashaw, I believe, and Dillashaw was on steroids not once but twice, but maybe three times. Of course, Dillashaw banned at least for a year, if not 2 years. At the end of the day, Cody got, he got the shaft. He just did. You are tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, that's the UFC rocking and rolling tonight. You can check out the UFC schedule at, Wikipedia. You can actually look at, go to Wikipedia and punch in UFC events and they'll bring you to the UFC page. And it's got like UFC prior events and upcoming events. So that sort of keep you clued in on that. Now, without sports, people have sort of been starving for attention. Well, sports are coming back, just won't come back with crowds. And I think that all the sports can survive without crowds except for, and it's not a sport, but professional wrestling. I don't think professional wrestling can survive without a crowd. I just don't. I think so much is based on the crowd. I mean, so much is, oh, you're watching, you know, the crowd's just so into it. I mean, the bad guy versus good guy. So without a crowd, I don't think that pro wrestling is going to be able to survive. I really don't. I don't think that pro wrestling would survive. Of course, the only pro wrestling company I thought was even worth a spit in the current day in 2020 was somebody called Major League Wrestling. Of course, they were like on YouTube for the most part. But the bottom line is they have a good program. I thought it was like old school wrestling for the most part. And of course, not sports entertainment. I'm not into sports entertainment. That's why the world of wrestling entertainment, WWE, former the WWF, that's why that, and of course and now this new program by Tony Khan and those guys on TNT, I'm talking about All Elite Wrestling, just not getting into that. Can't feel it, man. It's just not old school wrestling. And people say to me, well, maybe you're stuck in the past. Maybe you're stuck in, you know, it just was a better product. It just was. I mean, here's where they killed wrestling, is that they told you wrestling was fake. They told you wrestling was fake. If they kept the kayfabe thing up, in other words, you could watch it and sort of get into it a little bit more. But now it's fake. Very tough to believe when something's been told you it's been fake. In other words, all along, sort of like Santa Claus, you wanted to believe in Santa Claus, right? But you wanted to believe in professional wrestling. At the end of the day, both of them turned out to be fakes. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. This is a Saturday edition. Don't forget, you can catch all the Ring Talk podcasts at anchor.com. The executive producer of Ring Talk Live Worldwide is Scott Cuddy. Until next time, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can be doing a million things right now, but you listen to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, so I thank you from the Sports Byline headquarters.